You ever wonder about the people in family photos or ever try to ask who these people really were? Every face is a narrow escape or a love story that almost didn't happen. Your family stories are hidden in plain view. You just haven't accessed it yet. There are versions of these rebels and dreamers before life told them who they needed to be. And I'm not talking about the shiny stories everyone knows. I'm talking about the soul-crushing experiences with heartbreaks and real loss. You gotta preserve these stories now. So contact thevietnamstorybank.com today. No polish, just raw, recorded, beautiful history that makes you sit up and hold your breath. We dig it all up, record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, unerased, untouchable, and unforgettable. Don't let silence have the last word. Go to vietnamstorybank.com today. Make sure your family's stories are recorded. Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. I have a special guest today, Trung Bao. He's a multimedia artist. And I'm going to call you Trung because that's what we talked about earlier. And Trung, we met several months ago in Dalat on a very special trip. And since then, I've followed you and have so many questions. And I thank you for being here today with me.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Trung, you are from Vietnam, but you came onto the scene early in your years as a beatbox artist. And I think when I met you, I could not believe that. Like when I saw you in person, you seem you carry yourself as a not to say beatbox artists are not educated or don't seem that way, but it seems, you know, a lot more, I mean, maybe an American beatbox artist are, you know, they just seem much more hip hop, much more street, but you seem like a aeronautical engineer or a rocket scientist that, you know, the way you carry yourself. But tell me how you got into beatboxing.
Yes. I mean, I was born in Hanoi, born and raised in Hanoi. So the street culture here, the hip hop community, and also the beatboxing scene is where I started all of my career. So I think to see that these kind of like different behavior you mentioned about like the hip hop, how hip hop people carrying themselves, right? I have very much of that in me as well. To be fair, I mean, like I had a very great opportunities early on to travel. I mean, I study in the States. I study graphic design, communication design. And also from a very early years already, like I had a chance to travel to different countries to perform and also participate, sometimes even organizing beatbox competition, beatbox events around the world. So, I mean, like to see how hip hop artists carry themselves around the world, you can see there's quite a diversity. So I mean, like I have my own personality, so I get to just pick and choose like which fit the best for me. But yeah, I mean, yeah, the street energies, I think is still here, especially if you speak with me in Vietnamese sometime, maybe we will get a chance. You can feel it much.
What do you mean by that? If I speak to you in Vietnamese, is it because your vernacular, your language comes out differently? Is it?
No, I think because I was born speaking Vietnamese, right? So like this early stage of my life, like how I pronounce, maybe make sounds, is very much like carefree. I think maybe when I started speaking English, it's already, you know, my brain started forming already. Yes, I came to the States when I was 15, and I study and work there for quite a while. So those are the year that, you know, you started forming the identity of yourself and, you know, like trying and errors. So much of those years were in English. So the way that I speak is sometimes can be different, but also similar. I mean, this is quite abstract, but I can feel it very, very strongly. It doesn't mean that what I say will be different. It's just like kind of like the tone and
yeah.
It will depend on who I speak to as well.
Well,
I talk a lot about identity, obviously, on this podcast. And I think when you think about Americans in a general sense, you know who grew up kind of where they grew up, right? You kind of knew what you can kind of guess what economic situation people grew up in. And I'm making a real big general statement here. But if artists were just allowed to be who they are and they spoke, like really truthfully the way they speak, you can kind of tell where people are from. And I think you can kind of tell where people are from in Vietnam in that way too, right? All around the world. But I couldn't place where you come from, you know? And what I mean by that is, you know, based on hearing you and understanding that you're a beatboxer, but we spoke a lot in English. And so there is a certain understanding of who you are that I couldn't grasp at the time.
Interesting. You know? I mean, to be fair, I was living in Poland also for 3 years.
Right.
So my background is definitely mixed between like all the places that I've been through. But I think it's more of maybe what you're getting at is maybe more of the energy. I do feel that I embodies like the experience maybe from different country. I let myself be mixed like that.
It's beautiful. I think it's absolute. I mean, why do you want to be from one place, right? You want to be kind of like diverse, and you know, it's. I think that's a real good. That's a strong point.
Yeah. And the most important thing to me is that wherever that I place myself in, I can make myself home and don't feel like out of place. So like I spend over a decade overseas and then come back to Vietnam and it's like I can just fit in. And I speak like people around, I can communicate on the nuances, you know. And on the mannerism of people here, you know, in especially I haven't lived in other places in Vietnam, but like where I come from in Hanoi, the specific mannerism that you can see people do outside, but it's like it's all cool. Like it's very nice to just kind of immerse yourself in wherever you are. So I think that to me is like the something that I really focus on, but also let myself be just mix wherever, because I'm not so afraid of the idea of like I can lose my identity, because it's always there. Like it's always, like I can feel it the strongest. So, yeah,
your identity. You can feel your identity, who you are, the strongest.
Yeah, definitely. I think I mean even especially the more I go to other countries, I can feel that how everyone in every country, they think about identity and they question about identity much more now with, you know, exposure of social media that everyone can see everyone else in the world, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we can see that people kind of deal with a similar, they go through a similar thought process. So I feel very much Vietnamese and also get to inherit all of these experiences. Yeah.
When I think about singing or rapping and projecting our vocal style, you can know where the artist is coming from, kind of their vibe, right? But when you're playing drums, or if you're playing guitar, it's sort of a different thing. Piano, guitar, maybe you can kind of feel a little bit more something, but when it's just straight beats coming out of your mouth, how do you put character into that form? You know, it's a percussive expression, but I'm sure that you're, you know, you can close your eyes and, you know, the top beatbox artists of whatever, whenever you were really active in that world, you can close your eyes and, you know, that guy is that guy, that woman is that woman. You knew. Where does that sort of that expression come from?
Yeah. So actually, from what I hear, my brother is a classical musician. He's a violinist. And in fact, there's a lot of the music instruments, not even beatbox, right? Like classical music instrument, for example, a violin. the sound is similar. The notes people play are similar. The scores are similar. But the way people deliver always carry how the characteristic of how they speak, their voice. So in a way, since forever, the music instruments have always been the device for people to kind of augment their voice. So the delivery of the sound of the violin, for example, is very much similar to how people speak.
Mm.
And how people speak in different country and how people speak in different era is you will see that the style change in these different art form and different music genres as well. So beatboxing is very specific. It's literally come from the voice. So it's much more direct than the other instrument. So you can see, like, this is just utilizing the different parts of your body to make sounds. That's essentially what beatboxing is. This is vocal techniques, right? And all of these really depends on where you're from and also the language that you speak would define the characteristic of the type of sounds you will be pronouncing. So me specifically come from Vietnam. My style is very much similar to how I speak the Northern Vietnamese accent.
Wow. Your beatboxing is similar to how you explain that. Can you explain that, what that means?
So one thing that I noticed, I mean, this is like, no one come into beatbox and then to study this from the beginning, right? Because we don't really have like proper educations or any platform to share this knowledge. But this is from the realizations much later on that I had. So the Vietnamese language, the Northern accent specifically, has this way of pronouncing that the words are, I mean, all the Vietnamese words are very short. They're only one syllable per word.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see is that there's certain, the transient, kind of like the bounce of the word, or like how short the word is cut at the end. So like the sustain of the word is very, you know, like it's, in a way, it's very percussive.
Mm.
Much more percussive than English. You see, English, the tone and also how I can speak a sentence and it just kind of flow with each other. That's a sentence. But like, xin chào các bạn, tôi tên là Trung. Hôm nay tôi đang nói chuyện với cả anh Ken. It's like very, you know, it's very on the grid. It's very much like the tone, especially the way I pronounce. In like the Hanoi accent is very like, you know, on the how to say, the tonation,
yeah, is intonation,
it's on snap to place, and it's like relative pitch, and the way of the relative pitch of this zou is like very it's very percussive, so it's very much like how I beatbox as well. So I noticed that a lot of my sounds are sequenced like how I speak. And they also cut short like that. So there's not a lot of, I noticed like the most comfortable sequence that I would do, for example, they all like, you know? And some of the special technique I have is also from the tonation from the Vietnamese language as well. So this is one of the technique. So there's this it's always stay like that, and it's very similar to how you pronounce the na. Yeah. So like but you only can do that if you cut that vocal very short, just like how you do na or nga. So it's very specific. But there's a few other characteristics. For example, the letter D and B in Vietnamese is not D, B is L and L.
Mm.
And the tongue position is totally different from the English, for example. So like, if you say D, your tongue would go like this. and we push the air out. D, B, like B, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But the Vietnamese D is opposite. Your tongue go inside. D.
Oh, D. Da.
D. Mm. And B. It's very specific. But that's why, you know, like the Vietnamese accent, you can hear a lot of like D, you know, the sounds is shorter.
Yeah.
It's more bouncy. And I do notice this when I came to America. It's like, oh, wow, I do have an accent. I was very good at English when I was in Vietnam, right? I went to America. It's like, wow, I do have an accent, but it's cool. I'm going to keep my accent. Yeah, but I mean, especially when I started doing beatbox battle, and I actually went to the national event in the US, in New York, got second place. And but that was the first time that people hear the Vietnamese style of beatboxing.
Wow.
And the sound that I was doing was the letter D. And if you do it very strongly, you'll get this sound. This is like, it's so big advantage if you already speak the language, so you can do beat like. You know, so like the first time I did it, people were just like, wow, like,
because they never heard it.
They never heard it. And also, they never heard it in that context. So a lot of times, you know, the Vietnamese accent, sometimes like at the beginning I came to America, I was like, oh, this might not be a proper English, right? But slowly, when you see it in different contexts, then you start seeing like, ah, these are like in a cuisine, this is like the spice.
Man.
You know, as much like, you know, the English language, when you already reach the point that people can understand you, you can articulate your points, your messages, then these accents are like spices. It make you unique. And
unique.
That's what I learned the most from the beatbox community. And everyone, not only in America, but also I went to Europe, I perform, and people just love it, you know? And then also Vietnamese people in Vietnam, they hear me performing this in this context, and they also realize. And these are the things that people might just take for granted. You already have these sounds in your language. Everyone already have sound. They already make sounds, but sometimes they just take it for granted. So it's, I think a big part of my beatboxing career is to see a lot of these behavior in different contexts and realize kind of like the value of these tiny, small things. And yeah, and I get to pick and choose what is nice for my personality.
The craziest thing is I just did this clip on Instagram about how some people are very embarrassed about the Vietnamese accent when they speak English. But then like when it's French, Italian, a British accent speaking English, then they love it. You know, people love it. But Vietnamese people in America, Vietnamese Americans, when we hear Vietnamese accents, that is the English that's spoken and being affected by Vietnamese language, we get very embarrassed by it, ashamed of it. And that has like this historical, you know, different historical layers. But hearing you talk about the spice and how we're not going to lose this. We're going to keep this and make it a powerful representation of a percussive accent coming from the Vietnamese language is such a beautiful, beautiful angle that, you know, that I don't think about ever.
I think it's very, the most important thing for me is context. I think when you see a lot of these aspects of the culture, when you see it in the right context, then people can realize. I think it's not only for Vietnamese people, but for everyone, right? I mean, like what you mentioned, how there could be embarrassment coming from this, is that people attaching that to a certain
era.
Context. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For example, like movies or maybe historical trauma. So these things can happen. But I think moving forward, if we can recontextualize this, because I think cultures, any culture is beautiful and it's worth, the diversity is worth sharing. And I think deep down, everyone would love to enjoy and see differences.
For sure. I talked to the jazz saxophone player, Antren, a few months ago in New York. And her father is a famous saxophone player in Vietnam as well, I believe. And, you know, I had this conversation with her. We were on the sidewalk outside of a jazz club. And I asked her, I said, when you listen and close your eyes to a jazz musician playing a saxophone, in my heart, I think, because I'm not a jazz aficionado, I don't know jazz like that. But I asked her because I oftentimes think that when we think about music in Vietnam in the early years after the war, sometimes the music that we heard from Paris by Night were copies of copies of copies. And they never felt, to me, anything like Edith Piaf, right? Edith Piaf is the original La Vie en Rose song. But sometimes when you listen to it and it's two or three versions down, you just know it's like a copy of the copy. The French is not right. The whole musicality is just kind of off. So in the same way, I asked Antren, when you hear a jazz saxophonist played or any jazz musician, can you typically guess if they're Black people playing? And she said, yes. She said that was a great question. She said, I think you could hear it. And then today hearing you explain this sort of the context of the sounds that you make, I want to ask you the same question. When you close your eyes and hear an American beatbox artist and from America, can you tell if the style or if the rhythm or if the percussive notes are coming out distinctly American or wherever country, Poland, Vietnam, can you kind of, you know, place it in a general category?
I think the one problem that would, how do you say it? So the answer is it will be hard to recognize just only because the development of the beatbox as an art form is too fast and is too globalized too fast. So if I hear a style that is very similar to how beatbox was originated, kind of like this hip hop culture, when the hip hop culture was born, that style I can tell. I can tell that is American. It's very easy to see that. But from the time that they started have international competition and dominantly in Europe, since 2003 or 2004, since that time, the beatbox as an art form, is almost became its own genre of music. And the sound is a lot of sounds develop within the experimentation of the culture. And it's very self-reference as well. And the level change every year is exponential, is insane. So you only would hear, in my context, I already know some people that they got influenced by their language. And when they tell the story, it's very clear. For example, one of the best beatboxers in the world ever is he's a world champion from Bulgaria. And he was known for his very signature technical style. Really, really percussive and also very, the rhythm is very odd. in direct way is a lot of odd rhythm. So it's not like 4-4, like how we usually hear mainstream music, but because like the folk music in Bulgaria is already very rich in rhythm, and the way he pronounced it, and then when he speaks the language, it's just like, it makes sense. But I wouldn't know that if I didn't hear his story, right? Or I wouldn't know that if I hear him speak Bulgarian, because mostly the beatbox community is a global community. Even it's huge community, but it's also very small. Is that everyone around the world, top beatboxers or communities, they would communicate with each other, and mainly in English. But I think from speaking with many people, the language affects hugely. But if you are a common person, or even myself, if I hear a beatboxer, like especially new school beatboxer now, I wouldn't be able to place where they are, because the style is very standardized. A lot of the new sounds also getting standardized. Mm. And you will hear similar technique around the world.
That's not good, right? That's not a good
thing. I don't know. That's the thing. I mean, that's the same... that's the same conversation if we have about the amount of knowledge and information that we get from the internet. Is that a good thing? It's very similar to that. Like everyone all of a sudden get access. It's accessible to everyone in the world, but also is standardized.
The same.
So I think the bar is much higher. And I see that top artists, they still have all of these standardized techniques, but also there's some spices. So that's a separate. I mean, it's always been like that. I think it separate the top artists from the rest, right? But yeah, this the standard, like the bar now is much higher, and I'm still learning so much. Even from just some, all of a sudden, I think every year, all of a sudden, you see some random kids from random countries that you didn't hear about before. All of a sudden, just popped up and crazy stuff, and then everyone learned from them.
Wow!
But that's the thing. I think the good thing about the community is that it's very tight. It's tight-knit community.
Yeah.
So the information travels very quickly, and also their names also get heard very quickly as well. So I don't think overall, I don't think it's the bad thing.
Yeah.
It does become boring at times. Yes. As anything else, to be honest.
Boring.
Yeah. I mean, if everyone starts sounding the same, then that's the part I think you mentioned.
Yeah. You know, when I think about like a basketball player, you know, I think you hit 32, 35 years old and you have to retire, right? Because your reflexes, your ability, your skills, you cannot compete with a 18 or 23 year old player. Your body just can't do it. When I think about beatboxing, it's a very physical thing.
Right.
Perhaps not as critical as singing. Because I think with singing, there's a timbre to the voice. There's a very unique quality, and your vocal cords are affected a certain way. That changes a certain way. But as a beatbox artist, I think the reflexes and the creativity inside of your throat to mind coordination is very key and central. So, is there such thing as a certain age where you start to slow down as a beatbox artist? Or you age out of the game?
To be honest, at the moment, we haven't seen an example of beatboxers that train to this extent and also reach that age.
What do you mean by that?
There's no higher age. So a lot of the older beatboxers, the type of beatbox that they do is very different. And so far, the oldest not the oldest. We cannot track this, but some of the legendary beatboxers, right, from the hip hop time, the old school time, let's say.
Okay.
They still around. They still beatboxing, but the type of beatboxing is very different.
They can't evolve it, can they?
I think that they totally can, but I think it's just the engagement with the community push you to use certain techniques that is more demanding on your body. So a lot of the newer techniques, I think not a lot of people know the beatbox community is purely experimental. The whole key of the community is to find where's the limit of your body in terms of vocal expression and so capacity, right? So that's to the purest form is that when you see social media content, you see beatbox battle, these are only the surface level. Because you know, our voice has been around since beginning of time, but only till now that people started experimenting with it. It feels very significant. This is the oldest instrument, right? And only now people are experimenting with it. So that's why it's a feeling to be in this community, just to push boundaries, is literally testing what's the limitations of the human body. But specifically at this, you know, this section. So yeah, back to your question, we don't have a good example just yet. And so far, I mean, I don't see much change in the body. I do feel like the breathing system, you know, maybe in the future could get affected. I think the mental focus is not a problem. Because a lot of the practicing, I mean, similarly to a lot of other music instruments, you get into flow state and it becomes muscle memory. These actually enhance your focus to be able to be in the zone and also just flow. Beatboxers out of any type of art form ever is the easiest way for you to get into flow state. You don't need any devices, you don't need any instrument. You can do it literally anywhere. So there's literally no obstacle to just be and just do. So that part to me mentally is very healthy. And I don't think with age that would affect. Obviously, as anything, there's a lot of people push it a little bit too hard, you know, like they don't take care of themselves, they don't hydrate. You know, these things can have effect on your body. But, you know, professionally, I don't see that so far. There's not enough data. And also, personally, I don't think there's anything could affect it.
That would make sense. Yeah. The muscle memory, I think, makes a whole lot of sense. How did you get into it? How did you become a beatboxer?
Very similarly to most of beatboxers, of my generation is just YouTube. I'm the YouTube generation. I'm reaching 30 soon, but my generation is on. I learned most of the art from the internet, and there's no school that teach beatboxing. I mean, even now, there's very little amount of platform around the world that actually give proper education on this. And I think it's hard to make an education, for example, like a course for beatboxing, because things are, like I said, it's changing too fast, too globalized.
Yeah.
And so, my brother just showed me a video online of Razel, beatboxers called Razel, one of the legends. I even have his vinyl here. But he has a very amazing yes, Razo. He has a very amazing video that he performed as the breakdance competition. I think it's in 2004. But he was one of the first one that popularized the idea of singing and beatbox doing drum at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah, so like because you have a layer of your vocal and then you have your lips to do the drum. So you did the routine. Lips jumping on the bomb, you know. That was his technique. And the first time people hear that, just like, wow. I mean, even me, yeah, at that time, the first time I saw that video, I have to learn that. That is cool. And I was only in secondary school, very young. I mean, just in my bedroom. And very similar to most of beatboxers, I would think that they also started very similarly
that way. And then did you sign up for a contest or something in Vietnam, or how did it become international?
There were some clubs like, you know, like meetup in Hanoi, very small, only students. I did some local competitions way back long time ago, but only when I already in America. So it was the last year of high school that I applied for an international beatbox competition. And I got in. I was the first Vietnamese ever to qualify for an international beatbox competition. It's called Beatbox Shootout 2015. And I went to Austria to compete for that. And then after that, every year I apply for more and also level up and slowly, you know, I think the American Championship was the time that actually put my name
on the
more
map.
On the map. And also people know, like, oh, Vietnamese beatboxer. Then after that, I just, every single year, a lot of different competitions, very deep in the scene. It's an amazing experience for sure.
I understand that you met your wife through the beatbox world as well, right?
Yes. My wife is also a beatboxer. She's amazing. Her name is Carolina. Her stage name is Chihuahua. We, in 2017, I was participating in a world championship beatbox competition. And it was in Switzerland, and my wife is from Poland, and she traveled to Switzerland just to watch the competition. And then we caught up later, and you know, the rest is collaboration.
Do you guys collaborate now?
Yes, yes. We put out an album together. We do a lot of content. We used to run more the YouTube channel. But now we still do, but we also do a separate production a lot as well. But yeah, we still have music and videos coming out as well. We have very different style as well, but it's very, a good harmony to combine.
I could spend another 2 hours talking about beatbox in your world and all of the effect it has on the hip hop community in Vietnam. But I, you know, I need to transition over to your Voice Gem company, because I think that deserves a lot of time to really get into, because it's just beautiful work. So I know that the work that you do at Voice Gem, what it seems to me, and please correct me here, is that you take sound and you translate it into a visual medium. And it's like, they're not pixels, but they're like little tiny blocks. I think there's like 200 or 200,000 or something that forms these shapes that you put into with color, and it's just a beautiful thing. It looks like a clump of stars when I imagine what it looks like when I close my eyes. Can you tell me about the work at VoiceGem?
Yeah, maybe I can share a little bit of context leading up to that. A good transition from the beatboxing journey, right? I mean, so I had many years traveling and also performing beatbox around the world. So started from this core energy of experimentation and also pure human expression, right? Slowly, I mean, a lot of performance that I did, I started thinking about how to build different experiences. So different concept, but also different how to present sounds in different way. And slowly building different type of project. And in 2017, I founded a studio here in Vietnam. It's called Fustic Studio. And Fustic Studio is kind of like a hub that me and also a few artists from Hanoi, we come together and also just to experiment with emerging technology for visual media and also experimental art form. And a lot of the work that we do and the research that we do is at the intersection of creative technology with art. So art, multimedia art from sound, visual, and also local culture as well. I mean, all connected to the story that we were talking about. So VoiceGem is one of the projects that the journey from the beatboxing, the study that I have on the human voice, and also the studies of creative technology and the experimentation that we did at Fustic. Slowly, both of those lead up to this project. And it's called VoiceGem. And the VoiceGem project is a co-creation between myself and also a conceptual media artist from London. His name is Harry Yeff. Stage name is Reefs 100. And in fact, he also a deep practitioner of the human voice. Also beatboxes, legendary beatboxes, Reefs 1.
Did you guys meet through the beatboxing world?
Yes. So we, when I was participating in this beatbox competition, Reefs 1 or Reefs 100, his name, he was a judge, and he's much a very profound figure in the community, very influential, very inspiring. And we met through beatbox competition, and a lot of the conversation we had was around how to visualize voice and visualize sound. So this idea of connecting image and sounds has been around forever, and we did a lot of experimentation separately, but only in 2020 we got together, not physically, but in our mind, because it was COVID, right?
That didn't come out so right.
We started a project in COVID, and we really think about the idea of the human voice beyond spoken language. What are all the different quality that is going on in the vocal expression that people are experiencing every single day and taking for granted every single day? Mm. And the VoiceGem project really started from the idea of how to bring back the attention of people to the idea of voice, and ultimately to pay attention to their own voice. So the fact that we created this system, so the VoiceGem is a generative system, basically a set of rules that extract a bunch of data from a bunch of unique data from each of the human voice, and has a processing power to translate it into a sculpture, an artwork. And this sculpture is consisted of 200,000 particle, so data points. Each of them is assigned XYZ, which is a coordination in space, and also a color. So the constellation that you were mentioning is mm-hmm. is consisted of these 200 particles that are moving in space and get form and also crystallize in real time. So the whole idea is we think about voice is very powerful. We know we from practicing our voice, we know that it's very powerful, and we believe that everyone have the knowledge that is very powerful, but most of the time people just don't pay attention to it. So how do we bring it in a different form? So imagine a voice that you can touch, a voice that you can see, then your relationship with the human voice is very different. And you can find on the value how precious the human voice is. And you can pay attention to your own voice ultimately. So I don't know if on the podcast you're going to show the image, but the Voice Gems is the sculpture, not only digital, but also physical sculpture that is formed and colored by the human voice. So every voice will create a different, unique artwork.
You know, when I think about it, I think about the images that the parameters that you chose to pick. It's an infinite amount of parameters, infinite amount of colors, but obviously you had to pick a finite number of parameters to get this sort of, it's a uniformity in the delivery, in the visual aspect. I think what I'm trying to say is like, every human voice is like a fingerprint. And when you look at it, you analyze it, you could see the shape is very unique. But why did you pick, or I guess my question is, how did you come to pick those parameters? Because they all look, there's a stand, here it is, the question. There's a standardization to the form. Why did you pick that? And how did you finally end up on that standardized form? Because I can imagine you can just keep picking as an artist. You just keep picking mm-hmm. a million different parameters and a million different output selections. But you landed on something very beautiful, very unique for the ultimate pipeline that comes out on each characteristic.
Yeah, I think the point is definitely doesn't stay at the abundance of data. That's definitely not the goal.
Yeah.
I think the limitation is the key to highlight and also emphasize the uniqueness of each voice. So how is the question that we set for ourselves is how do we create a rule set that we don't pick the output, but we design a system that only geared toward an aesthetic, a feeling, like a visual feeling, but also highlight the uniqueness of each, every single voice. So this definitely go through the process, definitely went through many try and errors and also fine tuning all of this data. And not all the data are raw, obviously. This is the design part of the system. But the key here is how to build this processing system that is very straightforward, and also it has enough influence that it can showcase the special, the unique quality.
I ask that because when I look at a set of pictures of the constellation, the galaxy, I think about God, the creator, and I think about the parameters that when you pull back and you look at the whole universe in these pictures of the Hubble telescope or a shot, there's a standardization to all of it. And, you know, as you're creating these parameters, I was thinking, like, did you ever meditate on the power of creation or your understanding of the creator? Because when you step back and you look at your sculptures, the Voice Gem products, it has that feeling of like, oh, so there's a God that put parameters on what we're looking at and what we're experiencing when we're looking at constellations or galaxies.
Yeah, I mean, It's definitely an inspiration for sure. I mean, much of nature, we find out that there's a lot of mathematical equation that go into how a lot of creatures or plants grow, they how they form.
Yeah.
So I mean, like specifically in the voice jams equation, we also inspire a lot by the crystallization process, and these already have equation, and we simply also we extract certain equation that also can create some sort of clustering effects or maybe can make the structure influence the structure's texture. Some of the gem can feel more rough and some of the gem can feel more smooth, but it definitely feels very inspiring to connect these ideas of that already there from science but found in nature, to see that there's I think to see the creations in nature that exist is beautiful, and I think the creative process, much of it is definitely related to this feeling. How significant that is, that I think about every day. To be honest, I have not think about it so much. It stay more as a feeling. And I think when we can just create something out of nothing, even when I'm beatboxing, can just flow and they just sounds and rhythm come out. I do believe that's the best feeling, the best quality of art, the art process, the art making process, and also creative process in general.
There's a fly. When you record my voice and something comes out on a voice gem image, is it the same every single time that my voice is projected, or is it just me saying a word or a form of something coming from my voice and it only captures it one time? Or is there a consistency that every time I utter a string of words, it's going to come out the same way? Like, what are you capturing for?
Yeah. So a lot of time when we get a voice for this voice jams archive, we ask people to record 2-minute audios, and at the moment, the weight of how much of that recording influence and how much of your data, your fingerprint of the voice influence, they sit around 40-60. So the data, the unique data of your voice is really hard to change. For example, the resonant that you have, the resonant frequencies that you have, there's specific codes that it's really, really hard to change, unless you grow up from a child to an adult, then these tone can change. But that even that, when we look back to, we had a voice jams from a child before, a toddler, and then a few years later she grew up and her voice changed a little bit. But you still can see the colors and also some sort of form and texture is very similar. The way she deliver her words change. The way people usually have the way of their expression and their accent also influence in this. And these are the data that is very hard to change. For example, if I speak in Vietnamese, like we said, it's very bouncy. There's the transient is very prominent. Compared to someone just speaking English, for example. And these kind of quality you will find very consistently, and it's very hard to change. So definitely the unique data need to have more influence. Obviously, the message and the audio recording also influence in that, because it's in a way is a capsule of time. It's that specific moment as well. that is frozen in time into a form. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people would share their message and share their the ideas into a voice jam. But you will see the color and the form, the textures definitely will be consistent.
You're a multimedia artist. Beatboxing, voice gems, these are just one of, I'm sure, a few of the things that you do. What's in store for you in the future? What kind of things are you working on now?
So I'm running a media studio here, still the Fusik Studio. Fusik Studio, we at the moment, we're creating a lot of immersive and interactive experiences in Vietnam, specifically focused in Vietnam. I'm working on a lot of conceptual performance at the moment as well here in Vietnam. And voice jams, there's a huge potential in the preservation of identity and cultures. And we actually had a series back in 2023 of ethnic minority voices in Vietnam.
Wow.
And in this series, we have featured in different places in exhibitions. But this is also a space that I believe have huge potential to bring in the language of art and creative technology. I think there's a lot of potential to give people a touch point to connect with these stories and also connect with culture in a more, not only accessible way, but more engaging way. So, I mean, especially now you hear a lot of stories about technologies or AI coming over. Mm-hmm. AI is coming and take away people's jobs, and there's a lot of concerns with how the technology is developing now at the same time as social media. But obviously, I think there's always two sides of it. And I'm very interested in how do we bring more value to people using technology, using the language of art. How can we give people personal value? Can give culture a platform for preservation and also for showcase. I think there's huge potential this day and age, and it's more important than ever. And this is my mission in a way. So in a lot of different practice that I do, you will see the similar theme of identity.
Preservation. Culture,
because I think the most sustainable way to develop and to share technology or the story of technology is that is focused on culture and focused on people. Because we're still here, humans are still here, and there's huge potential and also huge demands for this, and might as well use it for good. So in performance as well, in Vietnam, I also working with a lot of traditional Vietnamese musician. I'm actually having a music video coming out soon.
Oh, cool.
Very excited for that. It will be a song that connect contemporary music with ethnic minority music, the Hmong music. And this kind of project that I think to bring in new expression and also this energy of experimentation to mm-hmm. people, I think it has huge value.
Yeah.
In general, I just want to share more art and just this feeling with people. I think people need it more than ever.
Spending the weekend with you was exciting. You know, I got to see, the new Vietnam, the modern Vietnam through your eyes and through your conversations with me. The depth of your understanding of art and multimedia, your craft is extraordinary. It's international, it's world class. And I think about the youth of Vietnam like you as a beacon of hope for my generation of Vietnamese. looking at Vietnam develop, seeing the artists, seeing the brilliance that's coming out of Vietnam, such as yourself, gives us a lot of hope. Jung, thank you so much for coming on today. And I look forward to the years that we have in the future to see what else comes from your art.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again, Jung.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.